All right, the recording has started. It's 1:31. I see people are still adding on, but I'm going to go ahead and call the meeting to order. I'd like to start out with a roll call and introductions. What I'll do, oops, hold on, I brought up the wrong thing. Hold on a second here. If you wouldn't mind just saying your name and who you're with, most of us know each other, but for the edification of anybody from the public who may be joining us or newer members who don't know everyone, I will start. My name's Alicia Charmett. I am a representative for the Fisheries Advisory Council representing fisheries. I'm also the executive director of Rivers Alliance of Connecticut. I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to go down the list, but next I'm going to call on Josh to introduce himself as co-chair.
Okay, Josh Gansler, Southeast Connecticut Water Authority, co-chair.
Virginia?
I'm Virginia DeLima, and I am formerly of the U.S. Geological Survey, and I represent the academic stream flow and ecology sector.
Dave Kosminski?
Present, Town of Portland.
Do we have Dave Calafia on the, is that who Decal
is?
Oh, hi, Dave.
Yes, it
how are
is.
You?
Good, how are you?
Dave was the member of OPM on the Water Planning Council and now a member of the public. Jonathan Avery?
Jonathan Avery. I represent Hazardville and Jewett City Water, which are small privately owned water utilities.
Fred Klein?
Hi, I'm Fred Klein. I'm an engineer and an attorney with Pullman and Comley on behalf of the Connecticut Power and Energy Society, representing the power and energy industry.
John Hudak?
Hi, with the South Central Connecticut Regional Water Authority and representing regional water companies.
Tom Tyler?
Hey, I'm Tom Tyler. I work for the Metropolitan District and I represent the wastewater aspect of the state water plant.
Pat Kearney?
Pat Carney, Town of Manchester Water and Sewer. I represent mid-size or municipal water utilities.
Martha Smith.
Hi, I'm Martha. I am with the West River Watershed Coalition in New Haven, and I'm an alternate for Rivers and Watersheds.
Jeff Puglisi.
Hi, good afternoon. Jeff Puglisi with the Middlesex County Chamber of Commerce. I'm here at my second meeting. Happy to be here representing the business community. Thank you.
Brenda Watson.
Hi, Brenda Watson here from Operation Fuel.
Allie Hibbert.
Allie Hibbert, Connecticut Deep.
Corinne.
Corinne Fitting, Connecticut Deep, Water Planning and Management Division.
Are there any Water Planning Advisory Group members I missed calling on because the participant names jump around a lot, so I might have missed someone there. Please speak up if I missed you.
Mike Emmons.
Oh, Mike. Yes. Hi, Mike. Sorry about that.
Hi, all. Mike Emmons, representing the Connecticut Nursery and Landscape Association.
Thanks, Mike. Sorry about that.
Aaron Boudris from Nautic Valley Council of Governments.
Oh, Aaron.
COGS.
Yeah, sorry about that, Aaron.
That's okay.
Karen Bernaska, Save the Sound, representing Watershed Land.
Ah, yes. Sorry, Karen. I did it to you again.
Okay. Margaret Myler, can you hear me?
Representing Margaret,
Rivers.
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
Carol Haskins, Pond Frog Watershed, representing Water Resources.
Thanks, Carol.
Iris Kaminsky. I'm from New Haven, represent the public.
Are there any, have we got all the members already before we ask the public if they'd like to introduce themselves? So it's okay.
Kelsey Sudall, alternate from Lake Warmont Task Force.
Thank you, Kelsey.
Hi, Eric Hammerling, Connecticut Forest and Park Association.
Hey, Eric.
Hello.
And I see we have the Water Planning Council Chair with us. Jack, you want to say hello?
Hello, good afternoon, everyone. Nice to be here with you. Fred Klein's looking very dapper with that beard of his.
And of course, we have Bruce Witchin from OPM, who is also on the line. And we have Marianne Dickinson from the Alliance for Water Efficiency as well. And if the members of the public would like to introduce yourselves, you can, if you don't have to. Or I see Tom Tyler also joined us. Tom?
We spoke up front. Thank you.
Oh, okay. Sorry, I'm losing track. All right. Okay, if members of the public would like to say hi, then go ahead.
Before that, hi, this is Ingrid Jacobs with Aquarian on behalf of Dan Lawrence.
Oh, thank you, Ingrid.
And Amy Petrucci here from Farmington River Watershed.
Hey,
and
Amy.
Kathy Piedmonte with Pura.
Hi, Kathy. Bruce, did you get all that?
I think I did.
Okay. All right.
Also, David Knopf from Darien representing local health.
Oh, hi, David.
Hi.
Okay, so let's move on to the approval of the May 19th minutes. Does anyone have any changes, comments, additions, deletions? Anyone? Nothing? You're going to have to unmute yourself if you do, because I just muted everyone to make sure we didn't have too much background noise.
I'd move that we accept the minutes as they're presented.
Okay. Do we have a second?
I'll second. Josh.
Are there any, I'm going to ask for any abstentions or any nays, because the yeas, we're just going to assume you're a yay unless you abstain or object. So I'm going to ask for that. Okay, I hear no abstentions and no objections to approving the minutes as they were presented. So the minutes are approved. I know that's an unusual way to do it, but I found it's much easier to do it this way with this many people on a Zoom call. So,
Alicia, I'm sorry. Yeah. This is my.
Yep.
I had it muted and I didn't know it, but I need to abstain because I did not attend last month's meeting.
Okay. So Mike Emmons has abstained. Okay. Also, just a couple of housekeeping items. This meeting is being recorded. It will be available on the Water Planning Council website. Was there any other housekeeping items I had to add to that, Bruce, that I'm forgetting, or Josh?
No, I didn't think of anything.
And I will be the mute police here. So I just want to make sure that we just don't have too much background noise with so many people on this call. The Water Planning Council update, the implementation group just finished meeting about 10 minutes ago. So I will hand these off to Virginia to give an update on the Water Planning Council Advisory Group.
On the implementation work group.
That's what I meant, sorry.
Yeah, we did meet. We had a very interesting presentation from the Alliance for Water Efficiency that was both giving a brief overview of what the plans are for the rates workshop that I think you've heard us talk about, which is now planned for March 18th. We had felt that it was important to have an in-person meeting. So that's why we postponed it to next spring. And it, the date was really chosen from one of the key presenters' availability at that time. Then we also, they also talked about the review that they have been doing of the state regulations and laws, starting with some of the recommendations that were focused on the recommendations that were in the state water plan. They gave us an overview of some of the things that they might question or propose in terms of possible changes or possible things to focus on. One of the tasks that our group will have is to respond to a survey that they're going to send out of whether basically preferences and things that we might propose would change and what they're recommending. And so we'll be doing that when we get it in the next couple of weeks. We did have a very brief updates from the two existing top work groups, one of which is on groundwater wells. As you may recall, their initial intent was to focus on being proponents of developing a digital database for the domestic wells. That has already been created by the Department of Consumer Protection. They are going to complete their white paper anyway, just so that we have it on record. They will be submitting that to the implementation work group. We will then run that through this group, the advisory group, because if you recall in the structure of the implementation work group, the Water Planning Council advisory group is also advisory to the implementation work group. So we would want to get any of your input to that. In addition, a small subset of their original group is working with DCP in terms of some of the nitty-gritties of how the database is set up and how it will function. And so they've made that link, and those two groups will be working together. In terms of the post-mortem on the 2016-2017 drought, they are continuing to look at the work that was done by the interagency work group, and they've gotten up through October, I think, in terms of looking at their meetings. They have identified some what was described as interesting things to talk about. And so they're going to continue working at fairly frequent interval meetings. And we'll be hearing more from them in the next weeks and months. We also had a discussion of establishing new topical groups. The groundwater well group is going to morph into one more focused on water quality, which in many ways will be a new group because it's the people who would participate in that are going to be different than the people who are participating more in the location of the work group. Also, there has been a lot of discussion of marketing as a topical work group to market the state water plan and outreach. And then also another subgroup on interconnections and regionalizations. Each of those groups has created a proposal. Again, as homework, the implementation work group is going to look at those proposals and, if necessary, tweak them so that we can do so in a time frame to get those to the Water Planning Council by their next meeting, which will be the first Tuesday in July. We did have a discussion about whether we have the capacity to handle so many concurrent work groups. And we hope we do. One of the things that was very beneficial about very positive about looking at the topical subgroups that we have working is that we're bringing in a lot of new faces, which had been the intent, to have people focus on something where their expertise or their interest lies. And so because so much of that work is being handled by new folks, we thought that we did have the capacity to take on new groups. So anybody else who participated in that meeting want to add anything to that, please do. If you're trying to speak and are muted, please just unmute yourself. Okay, Elisa, I guess that's it.
I have a comment, Virginia. Okay. It's a comment. Follow up by question, just bear with me. And you know, I kayak a lot, and mostly in freshwater lakes, but this past weekend, I was in the Salmon River, Lower Salmon Mutis, and I was really shocked at how low the water level was for this time of year. And going back and looking on the Water Planning Council website, I did notice that over the last 3 weeks, New England and then even into Connecticut is showing abnormally dry conditions. And I guess my question that leads up to it is that if it continues, I'd be willing to bet that more of the state would be classified as abnormally dry. And one of the questions I've always always wondered about is, has there been any progress in determining parameters for implementing any type of drought stage, or is that still a work in progress? Because it's something that, you know, weighs on my mind, because it's certainly starting out dry, and for the beginning of June to see water levels so low, and I know right now hydrologically it's probably okay, agriculturally it's probably a little interesting. So that's my comment in the question to you, Virginia, regarding that.
Thank you, Mike. The Corinne or Bruce or anybody else that participates in the interagency work group, has there been discussion of meeting in terms of looking at the current conditions?
Yes, Bruce can probably speak better, but yes, we're convening the interagency drought work group. Currently doing a doodle poll just to see when everybody can get together, but we are aware that of the drier conditions, and we're going to be monitoring it in accordance with the drought plan that is in place right now.
The website says you're meeting on the 19th.
I hadn't seen that yet. Thank you.
And then the other portion of Mike's question was the parameters that are being used in looking at droughts. As Corinne just said, they're going to be using the current drought plan, which has been implemented since the 2016-17 drought. And I don't know, Mike, if you are specifically questioning the parameters that are in that document.
You know, I'll be honest with you. I haven't seen that document, so I'm at the wet plant now. I guess my biggest question was, is there are a number of parameters have to go into making the decision as far as how do you implement some type of status as far as drought goes. And I know from Mike, and I've mentioned this before, Mike, the people that I represent need to have black and white decisions made, not kind of like, not necessarily gut feeling, but there has to be good science in place to determine when you implement some type of restriction.
Mike, if I could address that, I think there's good science in place, and one of the things the new drought plan put in place, which was very different than 2016, is that it now allows the interagency working group, drought working group, to look at regional droughts, not just statewide. The other piece that we're really looking at is, you know, how these relate to the water, utilities water supply plan, because they also have trigger levels. So one of the challenges that we actually had a discussion on this, you know, at the past work group, was that the trigger levels for the water supply plans, which are very different than the interagency work group, you know, it's what's happening in terms of reservoir levels and whatever. It may be that those need to be looked at, because some of them are an older way of looking at things, and there's some more, you know, more modern ways of looking at that. So we had that discussion, and I think we're going to be taking a bigger dive into that issue. For example, now Aquarion in southwestern Connecticut no longer looks at these drought levels, triggers, that's what I was trying to say, the trigger levels, that they have in their water supply plan. They're actually doing modeling that takes into consideration a whole host of things as to where the reservoir levels are, what that means in terms of water supply, future potential precipitation, and it does a much better job rather than having this static set of models, because trigger levels, because it's all about, and one of the things we've been talking about, is this a short-term drought or a long-term drought? And when I mean that, I'm talking about, did we have a drought through the winter that's now building up? So did we have a droughty fall and whatever, or are we just having lack of rainfall in a couple of months? So, you know, how long have we gone without rainfall? So we're trying to look at all of those types of things. So it's not just based on a couple of factors, but actually, you know, looking at them a little bit more realistically.
To Virginia. But for now, the Interagency Drought Work Group will be using the parameters within the 2018 Drought Preparedness Plan. And again, that's with some professional judgment, but changing the parameters would mean an overhaul and approval of a new drought plan at this point.
The reason I brought up the water supply plans, though, is because even though we have this state drought plan, when a particular water utility gets into a problem with a supply, it's likely that that will trigger the work. So, for example, there was work being done with the last drought, and there was so much challenges, as you know, in southwestern Connecticut. Yep. When they put the drought restrictions there, the interagency work group hadn't made any decisions. We were already doing all kinds of measures in southwestern Connecticut when they finally said, yes, we'll issue a drought warning or a drought watch. But it really didn't have any of the significant implications that what actually happened there did for particularly your business. So one of the things we looked at, and interestingly enough, one of the things that really helped, not for that year because that was such an emergency and everybody waited too long,
right,
was actually when they ended up putting on the two-day water restrictions from an irrigation perspective. Now, it doesn't impact your industry per se, but it, you know, in terms of the wholesale market like you're in, but what it did was it flattened out the curve in terms of water demand, so that we ended up having more water in the system all along, and they actually avoided going into drought conditions in the next year. So those are some of the things we'll be looking at. But I think from your business perspective, you know, when we're asking people like your business, it's not just about what you're doing. It's then, are you selling to a retail market where all of a sudden people aren't going to buy plants, or, you know, the people who are doing irrigation and whatever. So we need to be looking at that long term, and it's a difficult issue. And
Denise, just if I may, because it's a difficult issue, this is the kind of discussion that the topical subgroup is looking at, and so that's. And I think if you want to touch base with Steve Rupar, who heads up that group, he might be able to fill you in a little bit more.
Okay.
And we're just starting to get into the issue of what Aquarian's response was to the drought and then how it impacted the various industries, including the landscaping industry.
Very good. And that does indirectly impact our industry, because if people don't buy plants because they can't water them, obviously, then the wholesalers can't sell plants. So indirectly, any type of decision on the town level or regional level certainly would have an impact indirectly. So good.
Okay.
Good discussion. Thank you. I appreciate it. Good discussion.
Are there any more questions for Virginia before we move on? And actually, Mike, that thank you for flagging that, because one of the things I forgot to mention at the beginning of the meeting was I wanted to add current conditions and drought to the new business, to the agenda, because I did want to bring up the current conditions at this point.
Well, they were brought up.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. It was a good reminder. Um, So in old business, do we have a water utility coordinating committee update?
I know the Eastern Wilk had a meeting about 3 weeks ago. Jonathan, did you want to talk about that since you were one of the chairs of that meeting?
Yes, we did have a meeting, and we did another Zoom meeting as you're doing here, and we did have a moderate participation, I think that we are in a position of wanting to support the subgroups and work groups. And so I think that's where we were delving into, is how we could help participate. And we also were looking to coordinate with the other WUCs. So we're looking actually to see if we're going to have a combined big forum for the three WUCs. And that's actually something that we're looking to see where that goes.
Thanks.
That was it.
Any representatives from other groups?
We also heard something that I believe Dave Radka is stepping back, and that the Central WUC is right now having some issues of leadership. Is that, I think we were hearing about that. If anybody could speak to that.
This is Judy Allen. I'm a member of the Central WUC, and that's true. At the moment, we don't have much leadership and nothing scheduled. I did have a email exchange with Eric from DPH. I don't know if he's on the call. He's hoping to get people together, at least talk to leadership in August to talk about this.
Hi, this is Ingrid from Aquarian, the Western WUC. They're trying to schedule a meeting for sometime in July.
Great, thank you.
Okay.
Anything else on the WUCs before we move on? That brings us to COVID-19 related or issues for water-related agencies and other entities. I guess I'm interested, as everything's starting to open up, on, you know, how things are going with the water utilities, if there are any issues any of us need to be made aware of. And also, you know, I'd like to get an update from Brenda on how things are going from the relief side of things. Does anybody have any updates from industry? How what is your outlook at this point?
I can speak. This is John Avery with Jewett City and Hazardous Water. We're small, pure regulated utilities. So there has been a lot of focus on making sure customers are being taken care of. We've been focusing a lot on making sure that the customers are not being shut off, no late charges. And so there is a PURA process that's tracking that. And our experience with our customers is there's been very little change of behavior by our customers regarding payment. And our office is partially open. Customers can come in with a mask, and our customers are respectful for that. And I think they appreciate being able to do some interpersonal reaction with our people. And so we continue to have a positive reaction by our customers. They continue to pay their bills. And we just have water. So I think there are some further challenges for those water departments that are both water and sewer together. We do not have those challenges, but we do provide the sewer basis for the town of Enfield, along with Connecticut Water. So the two of us provide information, and then they in turn do the billing, the sewer billing in Enfield. So that's what I can report, is both Jewett City and Hazardville areas, the customers are actually not changing their behavior so far.
Great, John, it looks like you wanted to.
Like John said, we're also, we're not doing any shutoffs or penalties for late payments. We're monitoring collections very closely. For now, we're, you know, we've got reduced O&M and capital budgets, greatly curbed our discretionary spending. Interestingly, though, I think I mentioned probably in March, April that, you know, we were down 3 to 4 MGD or so on our draft, our production. It seems like since mid-May, things have actually kicked up to the point where we're producing more water than we were this time last year. So I don't know if there's anything about people staying home and working on their gardens, it's just an interesting observation.
Well, that's a little concerning considering I think it's kind of clear we're going into drought, but we can have that discussion later on in the agenda.
Well, it depends how you're measuring it and who's doing it. But I know it's been dry, but it hasn't been so dry the last 12 months or so. So, and we have, you know, a lot of storage. So we're actually well above our long-term average right now.
Brenda, did you have any? Oh, I'm sorry, Jack. Jack's got his hand raised there. Go ahead. You're still on mute, Jack. Here, let me see if I can.
Okay. I think I mentioned this at one of the last meetings is that I want to give a shout out to Lori Matthews and Public Health, because as Jonathan knows and John knows, Hudak knows, they've been actually having weekly webinars, usually on Thursday. They're about 60 to 90 minutes, and just going down in terms of what's going on with water, water supplies, water emergencies, people that might be having some compliance challenges and that type of thing, what they're doing in terms of sending their engineers out to do inspections, and quite frankly, are not. They're doing them remotely right now, and we're following suit at Pure. We're not having any of our engineers go out to do inspections. So they've really done a great job, and the companies have done a great job in terms of participating in these weekly calls, and have also adhered to the regulated companies, what Pure put forth in terms of looking at the people's ability to pay their bills, and have really come up with great protocols to deal with those people that don't have the funds necessary to pay their bills. So during these challenging times, it's nice to see that everybody is really working quite hard to deal with these unique situations we're in right now.
Thanks. Brenda, did you have anything to add to this?
Sure. I actually don't have final numbers. Our program just ended last Friday. I think preliminary numbers are showing that we provided about 400 households with water utility grants. I will have final numbers in a few weeks. We're still in the process of reconciling the numbers. And I also just wanted to share quickly that I, along with Water Utility out of, I believe, the Washington, D.C. area, will be presenting on a panel on the water utility assistance programs across the country, including Operation Fuel. So I'll share that information once I get more details. Of course, it will be a webinar, fortunately. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Great. We'll try to get that information distributed to the advisory group. Thank you. Is there anything else on this topic? It sounds to me like things aren't quite as gloom and doom as we feared going forward as far as revenue loss, and I hope that continues to be the case going forward.
Yeah, Alicia, this is Dave from Town of Portland. Our collective revenues, which handles both tax, water, and sewer, we've opted to go with the governor's executive order, I guess it's Section 6B. So we've offered the low interest option on for tax relief and also on the water. And so it reduces the interest rate as far as on the penalty to 1.5% instead of the 18%. So our customer base seems to be amenable to that. So far it's been working, and that's where we are.
Thanks, Dave. Anyone else? All right, so next on the agenda is the Alliance for Water Efficiency work. And Virginia covered the report to the implementation work group. But is there, does anyone, since we have Marianne Dickinson here with us, does anyone have any questions? Marianne, do you want to say anything? You're on mute, Marianne.
Sorry. Just that if people are interested in the presentation that we gave before the work group this morning, I'd be happy to send it out to them. We're going to be interested in everyone's input.
Thanks, Marianne. Anybody have any questions? All right, so let's move on to the work group reports. The Watershed Lands Group has been quite busy, just based on the volume of emails that I'm seeing going around. So Karen and Margaret, I'll let you give that report.
Well, I'm gonna give an introduction first to Margaret. The Watershed Lands Work Group has two issues regarding the conveyance of aquifer protection and source water land. One is a specific conveyance that had been approved by the special session in the summer last year regarding the conveyance of aquifer protection land in Cheshire for economic development. The second is the overall questionnaire, the Connecticut General Assembly questionnaire that legislators must complete in order to request the conveyance of land. But I think since most of the emails you've been seeing are regarding the overall, the general question regarding conveyance of land in Cheshire, I'm going to turn the floor over to Margaret to begin the discussion.
So am I off mute? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. So we've been very busy getting nowhere. Every official associated with an agency or the Properties Review Board, we've asked them the basic Water Planning Council question, like, where is this conveyance in the process? And at least until a couple of weeks ago, it had not gotten so far as to get to the Properties Review Board, which is usually the last step. Because there were some problems with the mapping of this and the title of that, and there was a pandemic, and but at DAS at all the different agencies, they all said ask the legislators. So for the last 10 days or so, Karen and I have been emailing Joe Arasimowitz and Senator Martin Looney leadership, who happened to have sponsored this special session bill that enabled this. And so far, we have not received an answer. My latest email said kind of maybe we didn't make it clear, but we are hoping that you, Speaker Arasimowitz, or you, President Looney, will meet with some representative of the Water Planning Council or arrange a meeting so we can discuss what happens with these 48 acres that are all aquifer protection land. My next step as an individual, if we don't get an answer, would be to write an op-ed, because it's the kind of issue that people pay even more attention to now. So, and I would be doing that on my own as somebody who when I was employed regularly on staff at Rivers Alliance, we worked on conveyance bill issues for several years. So this is an ongoing interest. If Jack or anyone here feels they can reach out and get some kind of response from the speaker or the president pro tem of the Senate, that would be great. I have assumed, and most of our communications have been directed to Arasimowitz because I believe it's close. I believe it's closer to his constituents. So in terms of what we're doing on trying to find out if we can mitigate or even reverse this risky conveyance, we still have not gotten a legislative response, although some of the agencies have tried to be helpful. That's all I can say about that. I do hope there's someone in the room or on the phone that can do better than I have done in getting some kind of response from legislative leadership. This must, of course, be a very touchy issue.
Margaret, I know that we sent you a response that you weren't terribly happy with because it was basically saying what our role is when there is a land conveyance and what people are supposed to.
I was happy enough with that, Jack. That was a response you gave to the questions that I think Karen will describe next. Questions that we thought could be added to the conveyance petition forms or request forms. And I was just teasing a little bit. It was a pretty good answer. Basically,
I've been used to your teasing for a long time, Margaret. So. But has DEEP weighed in on this at all?
No, they have not weighed in on it, although I have the impression they may have heard about it at the time, but since we've been discussing it in the Water Planning Council, they have not weighed in on it.
Okay. All right.
Let me go ahead, Jack. I'm sorry.
No, I think Karen's going to speak.
No, I was just going to say that we do thank you. For those of you who were involved with the last meeting, Jack was good enough to send the original draft of questions that we had prepared for addition to the conveyance questionnaire to the PURA attorneys. They did come back and say they had no comment because PURA oversees the conveyance or the sale of water company land. And when they do that it is per state statute. So they did not add any comments to the questions that we were working on. But thank you, Jack, for doing that. And I think Margaret was a little tongue in cheek when she quickly responded to your to the response. Let me just, Margaret, do you have anything else you'd like to say? I have to say, Margaret has been dogged, and I said this last time, and I give her a tremendous amount of credit, has been trying almost every avenue to see if we could get some legislative comment or more of explanation on this conveyance, and none has been forthcoming. So, Margaret, I don't know if you have anything else to say before we go on to the questions.
No, I'd like just if there's anybody in the room that now or later can help. I think Jack asked a pointed question there. That I hope they'll let us know or go ahead and help. And then equally important going forward is the questions that you have circulated and Jack circulated to his legal people. And so I'm eager to see if you think we're ready to go with that.
I'm sorry, this is Corinne. Just, are you waiting for something from Betsy, or did you ask specifically? I don't recall having anything to respond to.
No.
Is there something that I missed?
No, I'm trying to remember if we've raised that at all in a water advocates meeting, and I'm not sure. But I assumed that Betsy and Deep were here when the Water Planning Council, and I think it was PM, asked, what's going on with this? Where is it? You know, can we do something about it? And Jack stepped forward in a partial role. I assumed that I did not, and we did not directly ask Deep if they would comment.
That's correct. I mean, I offered to get response from, or do what I could with my legal team, but Deep was not asked directly. That's correct.
That is correct.
Yeah, Corinne, I believe our only correspondence with Deep has been through you, and it was with the help of Alicia's getting copies of maps or reference to maps, so you could actually see where the land being conveyed, where it was in the communities and with the overlay zones and the overlay information to it. But I think Margaret is correct. We have not, and Jack, we have not officially asked Deep for a comment. I believe at one time, and I certainly don't want to, I won't put words into anybody's mouth, that Deep said that they heard about it kind of at the last minute, like everybody else did when it was in the special session. I don't know. I maybe I shouldn't have even said that, but no official request for comment from Deep has been made. And if you would like, though, I hope you feel free when we send out the at least the questions or the draft additions to the CGA questionnaire, that if you have any comments, please do so. And I'm going to lead right into that, and maybe we can have a little discussion. In looking at, we received, we have never...
Karen, just one more thing for Deep. I think Deep might have at some point been asked, a kind of leading question, aren't your aquifer protection regulations good? And yes, they're good, but they're not designed to provide the kind of protection that an open space aquifer land protection provides. They're more of a mitigation, or and depending on the type of development you're looking at. So, it would really be very important if Deep would take a look at the conveyance and give us some feedback. That would be extremely helpful. And thank you, Jack, for proposing that.
If I could just add one quick thought. When you're talking about land protection and its role in protecting water, we're usually talking about it in terms of watershed protection and watershed management, so in that context. And so that puts it right into the group of folks at DEEP that are really looking at watersheds. And as you know, Graham Stevens moved from the position of being overseeing the state's open space plan and is now in the Water Bureau, and he oversees the watershed planning piece there, and that deals with non-point source pollution and whatever. So not to overstep Corinne, because she knows her agency probably better than I do, but I certainly think that it would be worth touching base with Graham, because he has such a strong knowledge of open space planning, as well as now this role in the Water Bureau. So just putting that out there as a thought where you might want to go and someone you might want to contact directly.
Good idea. He's terrific.
Yeah, he really is. To continue on the discussion of the questionnaire, we have never been able to get the exact copy of the questionnaire from the GAE staff, and probably because when we were trying to do it on, it was right, the COVID, the LOB shut down, I mean, right kind of in the middle of us gathering the information. So what the questions we have came from, and I will say the thanks from Eric Hammerling. He had an old question that had been, an old questionnaire that, not an old, but a questionnaire that had been completed. And rather than send around a questionnaire with notes on it and scribbled comments, he is the one who typed out the questions that have been sent around this that are currently on the CGA questionnaire. In discussing how we can get better information, on this land, as opposed to trying to do any changes on the questionnaire, we are proposing or suggesting an addendum to it, an addendum to the CGA questionnaire that would be specifically pointed at land characteristics and land uses. And so what we had sent, and we were and I'd like to thank the advisory group members who did submit comments to us on the original questions. What you have is, as you can tell, that somebody who doesn't really type very well put together a draft questionnaire. And what we would like to know from you is, is this the type of information, is there anything we're missing that when we hopefully do either talk to leadership and or the GAE staff who works with these questionnaires when legislators submit them, is there any other information that you feel should be included, or are we going about this the right way, and just generally get your comments on how you think we should proceed?
So I was going to just add one quick thing, which is I think you did a really nice job on the additional questions to ask, and wouldn't it be nice if some of those questions had been asked in the past? And it would be great if they were asked in the future. The one that you proposed, which I think is a little bit redundant of what is already asked and maybe could come off of that list, is really just the last one that says, please explain the future use of the property, e.g. recreation, open space, profit-making, nonprofit, other. Right now on the existing form, they kind of get at that question with a few different angles. Question F, how will the municipality or entity receiving the property use it? For example, open space, recreational, housing, economic development. So they kind of ask the question. And then they also ask with question G, if the municipality or entity receiving the property has a specified use for the property, would it agree to a provision in the conveyance that the property, if it's not used for such purpose, it would revert to the state? And also question K, they say, are there any deed or other restrictions on the use of the property? If so, please specify. So I feel like that was the one proposed additional question, which is kind of already covered, but I think everything else is great. I'd imagine there might be a little bit of wondering about how to best estimate existing land cover, but as long as that is clearly an estimate that you're asking for rather than something more specific than that, I think that is useful for them to talk about current use of the property. But I think you guys did a great job with it.
Thank you. My question to everyone I believe it was John Hudak and Aaron Boudris in getting comments back to us suggested certain maps. What is everyone's feeling about should maps be included in requested, or is this verbiage enough? The question, just to answer it.
Karen.
Yes.
This is Margaret. I was wondering, I'll be interested to know what people think about whether maps are needed. I know in the past, DEEP has asked for maps because just the language alone, it's sometimes hard to tell where the property is or what part of the property will be used. But John, I thought, his map suggestions were very good. At least people could be maybe advised that in trying to answer the questions, maps would be helpful to them, even if they don't include a great number. And he had good mapping advice and leadership, so maybe we could refer people to his map instructions or the way he uses map programs.
I did put together kind of a mock map of layers on ArcGIS Online that had all the layers that I could really get publicly. And I'm not saying people should use my map, but I think the one, there's Connecticut Eco has a map viewer with every layer except one. I think it's the public water supply watersheds. It may be easy to contact them and get them to put DPH's watershed layer onto their site. And from there, anybody could look at their site and see, you know, what's covered by impervious surface, if it's in the National Diversity Database, if it's in an aquifer protection zone, and get all the information there. I don't know if it's necessary for them to print out a bunch of maps and submit them. Certainly, as long as they identify clearly where it is for someone reviewing it, the reviewers could also, on their own, take a look at the site at the, on those web viewers.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good. You know, Corinne, if you're still there, would you like us to send a request to, like, Graham Stevens? Or to, can you handle, can it go through you? What's the best way to request DEEP to look at these questions and see if we've hit all the pertinent topics?
I can, I've already looked at them, actually, and they looked good to me. And I think having a map of the, just showing the parcel would be an excellent idea so that we can, you know, look at them, look at it within the context of the layers that we typically use. But if you'd like me to, you know, talk to Graham about it, I can do that.
Just had one question. I think I've asked you this before, Corinne. I don't mean to put you on the spot. Does DEP get the this questionnaire or get in specific information on the conveyance before the legislature votes on it?
I do not believe so, or I don't know how that happens. I would have to check on that, Karen. I don't. It's certainly not early in the process.
I can. Graham is one of the people, this is Margaret, that I've worked with in the past, and Laurie Brown often, where DEEP does not appear in most cases to get the information before the public. So many years we've had the experience of going to DEEP with a language for a conveyance, maybe the whole conveyance bill or a special act, and saying, what do you think of this? And DEEP is just seeing it too. They may just have seen it, or they may see it because, you know, advocates like us brought it to them. So in many cases, even when it's their own property, they do not get, they have not in the past, I didn't do this last year, they have not received a heads up, or nor has their opinion been asked. And they do theoretically have a chance to comment. Well, they do have a chance to comment, but it can be very curtailed, depending how late, you know, and if the public hearing has been held and it's a late edition without a public hearing, which is not supposed to be legal now, but things happen. Like everybody else, I think DEEP has had a problem keeping up with as the legislation moves. They have not in the past been given sort of courtesy consultation before the language comes out.
You know, I was just going to chime in that, Margaret, you're absolutely right. That is, and what DEEP tends to do, and I think a lot of agencies will do this, is have a little bit of tunnel vision. You know, this was a Department of Transportation property. They will first focus on, are there any conveyances being proposed of DEEP lands? And if the answer is no, they'll kind of sigh of relief and, you know, move on to the next fire that's burning. So, you know, I think that, you know, DEEP has some familiarity with this, but it's mostly because of some of the good advocacy that, you know, folks on this call have made to make sure to bring it to their attention. I would just add quickly that, you know, there will be an opportunity with a special session if this was something that the legislature was going to rescind, that now would be the time to be talking with them about that. As far as I'm aware, it has not yet been blessed by the State Properties Review Board. And so, you know, they still can undo what they did. And I would say, you know, if there's folks who want to work toward that end, the time to do it would be now. And certainly it would be very good to make sure that DEEP and DOT and others are well aware of concerns about this parcel.
Thank you.
You know, Margaret, you have expressed strong concerns to DOT, and yeah. your initial contact with the Properties Review Board, right, who had told you that it hadn't come there yet.
Correct. And as of, as I say, I think my last discussion with the last agency I talked to was DOT, and they did not have it ready yet for properties review. But I think Eric is right. Our opportunity to try to press this is the special session, which I guess I've heard it might be in July. I don't think there's a date set for it. It will be so we should consult, or we should talk, Karen, you and I, and anyone else that wants to be involved, who we should be calling and what we should be doing. First of all, we need to speak to the legislative leaders who sponsored the bill with a new bill number in the special session last year, because they must have a good understanding of the situation.
Well, you keep trying to do that, Margaret. I can attest to that.
See me sitting with a little sign outside the LOB. Please talk to me.
Okay.
And there may...
Go ahead.
The Senate champion for this bill, who if I'm remembering correctly, is not the current sitting senator who represents Cheshire. It was the previous senator. So this may be something that moved forward, but doesn't have super strong support and maybe could be undone.
Oh, good point. Good point. Thank you. So in terms of this work, I think the way Karen and I have been dividing it up, she's been doing most of the work on being sure we have good questions and sort of has the lead in getting to GAE and seeing if they will adopt these questions. And then in terms of the Cheshire conveyance, I'm supposed to try to make these contacts, and your point is very good, Eric, and then getting DEEP involved. But those are the two prongs of what we're doing. And Karen and I are mutually, we're working together, but she's done a little more on the questionnaire and I've done a little more on the Cheshire land conveyance.
Let me kind of bring this discussion to a close, because I know we've got other things on the agenda. If the group agrees, I will redo this draft questionnaire, deleting the redundant question, and continue, and it will stay as a draft. And we will continue to try to get a meeting with the GAE staff. We'll maybe go back to the chair of the GAE, and maybe we can meet with her, and to have a discussion on it. Do we have the blessing from the advisory group to continue working to get these meetings and to discuss it with them? I'm not going to say that, you know, I don't know if I have to say that this was voted and approved on this questionnaire by the advisory group, or we can just make general discussion or have a general discussion with them. And I guess Alicia and Josh, I'm like your thoughts on it.
I think as long as we have consensus from the group that this is the questionnaire is is acceptable to the group. You've gotten, I know you got a lot of input from several members on this. As long as those members feel like his their suggestions were incorporated and satisfied, I don't see any reason why you can't take it to GAE with the advisory group's blessing. I don't think we need a full vote on it unless you disagree, Josh. How do you feel about that?
I agree with you. I think most of the advisory group's already on board. If not, you know, now would be a good time to speak up. Okay.
Well, thank you very much. I will redo this and, like I said, continue our efforts to meet with legislative staff or legislative leaders. And like I said, Margaret is correct. She has been spearheading and she has been dogged and trying to get actually a meeting with Arisimwet and Looney or their staff regarding this specific conveyance. So is there any direction on that or any direction, additional information that Margaret should have when she contacts legislative leaders?
Margaret's been doing a really great job of really hounding them. And other than hounding them, I have no other suggestions. I think Eric's suggestion of possibly maybe pinging the current senator in the Cheshire area to sort of maybe gauge their feeling on this conveyance and this project. I've seen the emails. I know she's really has been hounding them, and it's quite sad that she has not gotten a response.
Well, Marks is a great suggestion, and I really wasn't aware of it. I was kind of thinking Cheshire would automatically be a problem, but that might not be true. So, or at least not the same kind of problem. I just didn't catch that, and thank you, Eric, because I agree it's very important.
So the bottom line is the saga continues. We will keep you posted. If anybody has any other additional comments, please, you know, send them along to Margaret and me, and we'll be on the agenda for the next advisory group meeting.
Thanks. Thank you both for all your work. So on the conservation pricing and rate recovery analysis work group, I apologize. I have not gotten that posted on the Water Planning Council website. I will get that done, and we will have a call for members, because in our discussion about the rate conservation rate analysis workshops that the Alliance for Water Efficiency will be doing in March, we came up with some items that this work group can actually help Marianne Dickinson with in preparation for that work group. So she's making a checklist of to-do items for this group. So we'll move forward on putting that together and probably convene sometime in the late summer or the fall to work on those items in preparation of that workshop in March. And then the utility merger analysis work group, the Water Planning Council didn't meet, so we will wait for their approval on that work group at their next meeting in July. So that's where that stands. Unless anybody has any questions, we'll move on to new business. Give everybody a minute to get off mute if you have any questions. All right. We'll move on to new business. As I said, I wanted to add the current conditions to the agenda, and I just quickly, I know we already discussed it, but I wanted to quickly talk about where we're at right now as far as drought goes. This was sent to me recently. This is down below Kinneytown Dam on the Naugatuck River. You know, understanding this is an impoundment, but things are pretty dry below that. There are some dead fish down in there, and some other photos, and, you know, we've heard from Mike Emmons, who is out kayaking on the Salmon River, that things there are low. I was down on the Connecticut River this past weekend and was really quite amazed at how low the Connecticut River was. As has already been mentioned, this message has been on the Drought Information Center website, which is on the Water Planning Council website, that things are abnormally dry. And interestingly enough, when we went into the 2016-2017 drought, it was about now that the Department of Public Health sent out a circular letter giving all of the utilities a heads up that we were experiencing some abnormally dry conditions. They expected that to continue. The forecast has not been good as far as rain goes. So I'm flagging this at this point because stream flows are low. And I know we heard from John Kudak that their surface waters are doing pretty well. But we were kind of there in June of 2016 too. So I just want to flag this as an issue. I hope it's not going to be an issue. I hope we do have some wet weather coming up and some replenishment. Right now, the 4-week stream flow is below 25% for everything but the Connecticut River Basin and some of the coastal basins. Half of the groundwater wells are below normal. So we need to keep an eye on this. As already mentioned, the Interagency Drought Work Group is meeting on the 19th of June. So I'm curious to see what comes out of that.
Alicia, one thing you need to take into account as far as 2016 goes is that in Eastern Connecticut, 2016 was dry, but the previous 2 to 3 years before that was also well below normal. 2016 was kind of the culmination of a few years of drought, at least in Eastern Connecticut, and each year got progressively worse. So the last couple of years now have been kind of normal weather precipitation goes. As a matter of fact, a little bit above normal. So I'm sure we're not anywhere close to where we were in 2016, but I've always been a proponent of reacting and not overreacting. In other words, reacting before it becomes a problem. So good.
This is Fred. I have a question for the group. I'm on the Water Planning Council Drought Information Center website. It says as of June 15, 2020, Connecticut is experiencing abnormally dry conditions. You know, what's the next 7 days? I go to the MDC website, for example, and it says that as of May 31, 2020, just 2 weeks ago, their reservoirs are at 99.5% of capacity, giving them water storage volume equivalent to 660 days. So I can appreciate the fact that the state looks like things are low, but yet MDC is reporting 99.5%. I don't know what's happened in the last 2 weeks. I don't know if anybody can comment on that, but I think as we've discussed in the past, things are more regional or basin oriented than statewide. And I'm concerned about creating some sort of a panic. If people, for example, look at the state website that says we have problems, but then they look at the MDC website that says right now in central Connecticut, things are fine. And I welcome some discussion and comment.
So we've had this discussion in depth in the drought subcommittee meeting at the implementation work group. First of all, the MDC has some of the largest surface storage in the state. And so looking at that, you're looking at one extreme for sure. And you know, as Mike mentioned, even the 2016-2017 drought, the eastern part of the state was not hit as hard. So I don't think we should throw the baby out with the bathwater and saying that, you know, we should only target the regions that are seeing drought because, you know, we do have a lot of emergency interconnections. And so some surface waters that may not, that may be, may have an interconnection with another reservoir system or service system that isn't as resilient or does not have as much storage, they may have to provide water to that system. So it's a little bit more nuanced than that. And I'm not saying we should sound an alarm. I'm saying we need to pay attention at this point. So we don't find ourselves in a position where Fairfield County has to have emergency water service because they only have 6 weeks of water left. So if we're paying attention now, and it's not only the drinking water we have to worry about, it's stream flows as well.
I appreciate that. I'm just wondering whether or not, for example, the state website should get a little bit more granular in its reporting, only because, again, you know, I don't know how many customers MDC has, but I know it's a lot. And, you know, I just think that the public should get a fuller picture, a more granular picture, a more accurate picture of the water conditions.
That would include hydrology as well. A lot of the people rely on wells in this state, and so you know it's a bigger picture than just MDC and the reservoirs. Probably about half the people in the state rely on wells for the drinking water. So hydrology wise, you know, where's the levels are in the ground as well.
Mike, as usual, I totally agree with you and appreciate your comment. I totally agree.
It's important to point out, everybody, too, that the state drought plan is much broader than a water company individual water supply plan, because we're just looking at how much water we have in our reservoirs and, you know, if it's sufficient for the moment. And this is based on maybe going back 1 year, 2 year, maybe even 3 years of rainfall. It's perfectly plausible that conditions in New Haven County or Hartford County could be very dry right now. Stream flows could be very low. Yet we could have plenty of water for public water supply, which, you know, may be the case now.
John, what were your levels in 2016? Do you remember?
Oh, if you give me like a couple of minutes, I can go back and look. I'm not sure. I think the drought might have even started before that.
Maybe, it did.
It seems like, seems like 2015 was dry as well.
Peppermine Brook dried up in the fall of 2015.
Yeah, so I would think this may be like the beginning of 2015 than 2016, but I
right.
have to go back and look.
Well, like I
right now we're 96% storage and 93 is normal for this time of year.
Yeah, that's not bad.
End of May.
And let's not forget, it's not only the surface waters that are under threat. As Mike mentioned, we have individual wells, but you also have groundwater wells that influence stream flow.
Absolutely.
And some of that, you know, we have a regulatory disconnect. So to only think about surface water and public drinking water supply, you know, we're forgetting about the other side of that scale of managing our water for fish, fauna, and recreation.
Yeah, I totally agree.
This is a discussion that we've been having literally for decades in terms of how the state water plan, even if it's looked at on a regional basis, how that interfaces with public supply, drought plans, and public supply availability. And if anybody has a suggestion on how to make those two things, communicate those two things, which can be at odds, to the public in a way that the public can handle, I'm open to them, because the reality is will never be in total agreement in terms of what's going on in a particular area. And I know I've had arguments with some members of the legislature who says we need one message. We can't have two messages. The public can't understand it. But the reality is there are two messages. MDC can have a lot of water. Hartford County can be desperately dry. And so how we can communicate that, we're open to suggestions, but I don't think that this is the forum to have those discussions.
Well, this is Margaret. Could I add one thing about, can you hear me, about the MDC capacity? It has just below it two of the most stream flow impaired, most notoriously dry streams year after year, which is the East Branch of the Farmington and the Nipong River. And when it really is so aggravating to hear year after year, we have 99% capacity, but we're not going to put 1 gallon downstream into those little streams. So I think the public can understand that. I'm not sure if the public cares, but I mean, I think that's a pretty good visual. You can walk along the stream bed and see the problem.
If I could just add in on messaging, all of us who are here at this table are very in tune to everything that's happening right now. The public knows it's dry out if you have a garden and whatever, but oftentimes, and I know when my role with the conservation director for the town of Greenwich as the person who was in charge of our water supply and liaison to Aquarion, we often were dialoguing with Aquarion a year or two before we got into drought restriction. So I just want to just talk about that messaging, that we're looking at all this data and we're looking at it. There's not a lot of messaging going out to the general public per se at this point. So I just want to make sure people understand that when they start jumping to conclusions saying, well, there's plenty of water in the reservoir. Well, no one said there wasn't, and no one said that there, but that doesn't mean that there's not a drought out there, and everybody knows it's dry. And I have to agree with Virginia that I think the people can hear two messages, but I think it's up to us to know when to release a message and what we need to say, and also making sure that it's, you know, in enough time so that we don't get caught flat-footed. So, but I do want to just put it out there that right now what this drought is telling me is that all of us who are involved in water supply need to be paying attention and nothing more at this point.
Yes, this was merely a heads up, because I think there's been some complacency from how wet it was in the spring. And I just don't want to see us ending up where we were in September of 2016.
So, this is John Avery again. In Jewett City, right next to Norwich, we have a full reservoir. That's encouraging for us at this time of year. That is not our normal state. Our normal state would be maybe 80%, 90% this time of year. We only have a small reservoir. We only have 90 million gallons, which is about half of our year's capacity. So that is a relatively small reservoir. And the other thing I would comment is that up in our Hazardville area, up in Enfield, we have only groundwater wells. And what an indication for us of how dry it is that one of our larger farmers has just recently made a request to activate some large services that they have, and usually we work together with the farmers when they need water. So that's an indication of dryness, is that the farmers are beginning to ask for water.
Well, this is an indication of dryness for fish and fauna, especially during migratory fish season. Let's move on to the last thing on the agenda, aside from public comment, is the return to place-based meetings. Right now, there's no indications of when that might happen, and I'm not sure we need to have a lengthy discussion about this, but there is a hope that we can still have some sort of, possibly maybe pilot a hybrid hybrid system of place-based meeting once we go back, and this sort of forum, because, you know, we've had actually quite a bit more participation since doing the Zoom meetings. We'll see how that goes, but I don't think we have to worry about it in the coming months. As far as I know, the agencies are still encouraging their staff to work from home as much as possible. So I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on this unless anybody has any quick comments before we go on to public comments.
I think you described it that effortlessly. We have heard nothing. Well, there's some evaluation of when it might return, but there's no concrete date at this point at all. So, and you can see, I mean, look what's going on in other utility companies. Many places are staying home to the end of the year, so you have no idea which way we're going to go.
Jack, you were very muffled.
Yeah.
I said what I said is that there's no plan date for us to return. I go in the office like once a week, but they're encouraging all employees to work from home. They mean the governor's office at this point. And there's no concrete date for us to return at this point. I would only guess at this point. But and as I said, many companies that I've heard are staying out to the end of the year. So I don't know what's going to happen to the state.
All right, is there any other new business before we move on to public comment? Josh, did I forget anything?
No, I think you got it. Any public comment?
I have a quick announcement. DEP's Integrated Water Quality Report, the public comments are due on Friday. So just a quick heads up on that. All right, any public comment?
Hey, Lisa, this is Tom Tyler. Certainly, I'd like to make some comments not related to my role as wastewater and water planning council, but to Fred's earlier question, the district provides water, wastewater services to about 400,000 people in the capital region. We post the information regarding our reservoirs on our website. I don't believe we're actually required to do that. I think we're one of the few utilities that do it. The information is accurate. It could be a decimal point off at this point, but we always try and keep that information updated and accurate. And, you know, I will say that we take our role very seriously. I think it's easy for folks to poke at the district a lot, but to the last agenda item about place-based meetings. I want everyone to know that while all the state workers and business have all been home for 2 months, hunkered down, our employees have come to work every day, worked diligently through very difficult conditions so that we could provide good quality drinking water and appropriate treatment of wastewater. We take that very, very seriously. And so, you know, I don't know that I really appreciate the district being poked at continually, because we take our job, which is very difficult for all the utility people, they understand that. We take it very seriously. If people don't like the way we conduct business, please participate in our public meetings and make your voice heard. Thank you.
Is there anything else?
No.
Any other public comment?
All right.
All right. Well, our next meeting is July 21st. I think our format and location is probably determined. It will probably be through Zoom, 1:30 regular time. And do I have a motion to adjourn?
So move.
Second.
All right. Second. Well, everybody enjoy the day. It's a beautiful day. Hope you're able to get outside, soak up some sunshine and some fresh air.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a good day.
Take care.
Take care, everybody.
Thank you.